We're doing Tanit Be'eliyahu, the second chapter, the ninth paragraph, the tenth paragraph. And by way of introduction, we're going to speak a little bit about the constellations and the way our sages viewed the constellations, the zodiac. And we'll begin with the acronym Tashet Sa'av and Me'ak Gedad, which stand for the 12 constellations. So Tashet is Tle, that's the lamb. You know, that's the primary zodiac on the month of Nisan. Shin Tashet is the shol, that's the ox. Taf is Te'omim. So we're going Nisan, Iyar. Iyar is shor, right? Nisan is Tle, it's the lamb. Iyar is shor, that's the ox. Sivan, when the Torah was given, so that's Te'omim, like twins. That's when God made us godly. God made us, so to speak, His twin. God said, I'm singular in my heavens, I'll make a singular nation down on earth. God gave us the Torah. That's twins. Tammuz, the month of Tammuz is Sartan, cancer. Av, that's the month in which the temple was destroyed. And the lion, Nebuchadnezzar is referred to as the lion, arose from his den to destroy the temple, which is also called Hoy Ariel, Ariel, woe my lion. That's the month of Av, that's the mazal Aryeh, lion, Leo. And Bitula, virgin, that's the month of Elul, when we all repent and have a fresh start, like a young girl who has a new start, she's fresh, so that's Betula. So that's Tashet Sa'av, that's the summer half of the year. And then we have Me'ak Gedad, which is Mem, Ayin, Kuf, Gimel, Dalid, Dalid. Tishrei is Moznaim, that's Tishrei, the scale. What's it called in English?
It's called Libra.
Libra, okay. That's a scale. And then we have Cheshvan is Akrav, Scorpion. Kislev is Keshet, the bow, right? The children were playing with bow and arrow when the Greeks came. That's why a lot of kids play with bow and arrow on Hanukkah, Kislev. Teves is Gdi, young goat. Shvat is Dli, the bucket. And Adar is Dagim, fish. That's the Jews were compared to fish, and we say that we have good mazel in the month of Adar, right? So those are the 12 in the zodiac. Those are the 12 the way we say them, and that was Me'ak Gedad. Those are the winter months, starting from Tishrei, going through Adar. Now, in the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis, the Gemara discusses when did the mabul happen. And the Gemara says that God made a change in the constellations, and some lunar event, some solar event, is what caused the Mabul to come. According to one understanding, God brought up Mazal Kima in the improper time, and we'll discuss in a second how that works. And another understanding is that God took two stars out of Kima, which is part of Tle. Kima is a part of the lamb in the month of Nisan, and that's what made the Mabul come. So either way, it was something to do with Mazal Kima, with the lamb. And the Gemara in Pesachim discusses where is the world situated with regard to the zodiac. And the Gemara says two opinions. Either that it's in between Akrav and Egla, between the ox and the scorpion, or it's all situated under one star. The mazal of Kima, which is the tail of the lamb. And the Gemara discusses those two opinions, and there's difference. There's Rashi, Tosus' opinion over there in Psachim. We're going to begin Tana de Be'el Yo and see the way he explains it to us, and maybe we'll try to get some deeper understanding as to what's going on here. Amru Chachamim. So Eliyo Hanavi is quoting, the sages said, Kol ha'yishuv yoshev ben egla le'akav. All of mankind, all of civilization is situated between the Egla. Egla is the young goat, which is a reference to the ox, and Akrav is the scorpion. Notice that the ox is the second mazel. It's the mazel of Iyar, second from Nisan, and the scorpion is the second mazel from Tishrei. So it means half of the zodiac in the sky encompasses, according to this opinion, earth or domesticated earth. Amalti lahen, so Eliyahu said to the sages, Rabotai, my masters, afar ani tacht kapot raglechem, I'm like the dust under the calves of your feet, under the soles of your feet. Ani umar lifnechem davar achad, let me say something before you. Amru li emor, so he asked for permission to speak, they say, speak up. Amalti lahem, so Eliyahu said to them, tachat kochav echad kol bei olam yoshvim. The whole world is under one star or one constellation. As our sages said, Amru li ten lanu siman nedvarecha. So the sages said, give us a sign. You're claiming that it's all under one star. Prove it. Amar lehem ani noten. So I said to them, okay, I'll give you a sign. Amarti lehen, I said to them, Rabotai yamdu shnayim. My masters, let two people stand. Echad be'eretz Yisrael. One will stand in Israel. Ve'echad b'chach gadol shebevavel. And one in a great city in Babylon. And let them place their heads directly under a specific star when the sun rises, or exactly at sunset. Doesn't matter whether it'll be the first of the month, the fifth of the month. Won't they see that the angle, the difference between the sun and that star is exactly the same? The size of the star is the same. Everything is. They'll mark all the astronomical markings to locate the star, the size of the star, the angle of the star, everything's going to be identical, even though there's a large distance between them. One's in Israel, one's out in Babylon. So he said, if when we traverse such a distance, there isn't even a minuscule difference as to the positioning of the star, so then that's going to indicate that the world is all under one star. As our sages said. So, what's going on here? What does it mean under one star? And what does it mean between two stars? So there are different understandings. One understanding says they're discussing the area of the earth. And he said that the area will equal the area of that star. And they said the area of the earth equals the area between these two stars. And he said no. There's a tremendous area between those two stars, and you can't say that the whole earth has that much area. That's wrong. And just 1 second, we'll open the Gemara in Psachim. So the Gemara in Psachim, Daf Tzadi Dalid. The Gemara says like this. The Gemara's The Gemara is trying to figure out the area, the circumference of the earth. And then the Gemara tries to figure out the depth of the sky. And the Gemara does a calculation, how long can a man walk from the time the sun, the alos ha-shachar, the first break of dawn, till the sun rises. And the Gemara figures out it's 5 mil. And the same thing from Shkia till Tzis HaKochavim, which is, by the way, one of the big sources, if not the source, for figuring out when Alos HaChama is and when Tzis HaKochavim is. And then the Gemara wants to work out the sun's traveling in the sky and figure out if this is the amount of distance we go, how much does the sun go, etc. So I don't know of a clear pshat in this Gemara. We apply it halachically to figure out our times, but to figure out the circumference of the earth, I don't know. And then the Gemara gives all kinds of understandings as to the size of the world. And it quotes this Tan de Elio. And Rashi over here explains that when the Tan de Elio said we're all under one star, he was coming to tell us, and look how many stars there are in heavens. You can't even count them. There seems to be an endless number of stars. And if it only takes one star for all of earth to be under, so then we see that, and we know that the earth has a large area, so we know that each one of the stars has the equivalent, can have the equivalent of the size of earth. And from there he wants to figure out, according to Rashi, if we're going to say that we're under the six stars that are in Kima, and 1,000, they want to say that the area of mankind that mankind was living was 1,000 parsa. So then, if Kima has six stars and each one corresponds to that size, they wanted to deduce from that that the world is 6,000 parsa. They wanted to deduce from that the size of the heavens. And they said that if we know the size of earth and we'll multiply it by the number of stars, and we know that there are stars that are at least the size of the earth, so then we know that the heavens is much, much bigger than the size of the earth, and much bigger than any of the numbers that they wanted to give earlier. That's how Rashi explains this this quotation. That they were trying to figure out, they were saying, if earth corresponds to this star, and this is the size of the earth, and we know that there are larger stars and smaller stars, but there are many, many, many stars in the heavens, then we know that the heavens are much bigger than all of the estimations that the Gemara gave earlier. That was the proof they were bringing. In which case, doesn't have as much relevance to us. It seems more more abstract. V'chimai tivash lota kima, says Tan de Belio, what is the nature of this constellation kima? Shehi kimo shiva kochavim barakia. It is like six stars in the heavens. And you should know there's in the Gemara, there's an opinion that says it's 100 stars in the heavens. V'chulan smuchin ze lazen. They're all adjacent to one another. So you have, this is the star that we're all under. Limed ha-ketuv derechertz ladorot. And this teaches derechertz for generations. Shlo yimar adam mipnimayin ha-rakei atzma avaka kochavim. Person will say, why isn't the heavens as wide as the different stars? Meaning, people are going to say, why is it that God made it that you have a dark sky, and you have pinpoints of light, you have little stars in the sky? Let God make it that you have big chunks of light, big stars, and the whole heavens should be one big series of stars. Instead, God made it that there's this vast area, and within that area you have dots of light. Now, a person is taught from this not to ask that question. Why? In a second he's going to explain why. Before we go further, we have to introduce the concept of stars in Chazal. Chazal viewed stars as an appeasement to the moon. We have a tradition that when God created the world, he created two great luminaries, the sun and the moon. And then the moon stepped forward and said, you can't have two kings in the sky. And God said, you're right, I'll diminish you, and made the moon smaller. And when God made the moon smaller, God wanted to appease the moon for making it smaller and making it only get light from the sun. It's not its own source of light. So God appeased the moon by giving the moon armies of stars. Now, this is a midrash which has a lot of depth to it. The Gemara says that when we read the verses that describe the sacrifices of Rosh Chodesh, so one of the sacrifices is a chatas offering. It's an offering that's brought on a sin, as atonement for a sin. And there's a discussion in the Gemara, what's it atoning for? And one of the things the Gemara says is that God is saying, atone for me. Atone for the fact that I diminished the moon. And some want to say that this refers to the concept that God, so to speak, diminished his revelation in this world. We look at the world, we see there's bad in the world, there's evil. You could look at the world and say God's not running the world. Sometimes you could look at the world and say you got to be a fool to miss God's hand in the world. And sometimes you could look at the world and say, where's God? What's going on here? So God, so to speak, says, I've made this world in a fashion where the world seems lacking. And that's part of the challenge of living in this world. If God's hand were recognizable, then we wouldn't have free choice. We know God's watching. But God made it so that we don't recognize at any given moment that God is running the world. It's not easily recognizable. At the same time, God says that God, so to speak, feels bad about the fact that he did it this way. And God says, I want atonement for that. And when we look at the story of the moon, so we see an interesting concept. The moon got what it deserved. The moon opened its mouth. So why does the moon need appeasement? It did something. It got its rightful punishment. So nonetheless, God says, I want to appease the moon. I'm giving it the army of stars. And by the same token, God created the world in the way he saw fit. And yet he says there is a certain appeasement that's necessary for the fact that there are things lacking in the world. Lacking in quotation marks. Now all of this, we're using childish terms. The moon said, the sun said, but I assume that we're all old enough to apply this on a deeper level. Obviously, we could leave it at that and count on everyone else to apply the deeper levels, that it's the moon, the angel that's representing the moon, etc., as we've discussed. Yeah?
You said that he created like the stars, all the stars. Are you counting like the planets that like modern society found, like the solar system planets like Mercury?
It would seem that way.
Considered like with the moon or with the Earth?
Like, I think that those would be considered with the moon.
Because like I guess the stars are unreachable, like the stars, not the planets and the moon.
I think that they're all counted as stars. It seems like when Gemara refers to the morning star, that's either Mercury or Venus. So it seems like that's a star. It seems like the Gemara's reference to planets was as one of the stars. It's I don't know enough. This is my understanding. I don't have a source for what I'm saying aside from one I just gave.
Doesn't Mishlei group them into this part, the seven heavens?
How do you mean?
I can't quote exactly, unfortunately, but it groups certain celestial bodies into groups in the seven heavens.
Trying to remember. I don't remember what you're referring to.
I can't remember exactly either, unfortunately, but I'll show it to you that maybe you understand.
Okay.
If that's the case, if it does group them into a certain group, it would seem to answer the question.
Right, for sure. Let's see. Let's see. So the Torah is teaching us there, Chayetz, that a person shouldn't say, why is it that the heavens wasn't created with a thickness like the stars, but rather heaven is empty space, and the stars are little points of light within that space, which we see from the Medrash that our sages already recognized that the stars weren't little points of light, but they were at least the size of Earth. There were stars bigger and smaller than the size of Earth, as we discussed earlier. Sages gave an allegory. What is this similar to? A king had a brick of gold. Maybe he'll place the brick on his head. Is that nice? That's not the way a king would behave. Think, well, I have a brick of gold, so I'll show off my wealth. If he walks around balancing a brick of gold on his head, no one's going to look at him and say, that's nice. That's not fitting for the king to do. What does the king do with his wisdom and understanding? He takes the weight of a half a sela, and he makes it into a string of gold, and he hangs it by his neck. And I wasn't sure, I saw different, I'm not sure if what it means here is that he has a necklace, or that he takes the remaining part of gold that hasn't been used to make this necklace and hangs that at the end of the necklace. Wasn't it utlo'o? He hangs it. Hangs what? the remaining gold, or hangs this necklace by his neck. Zeu shivcho shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is the praise of God. Yeshmo gadol baruch l'olam l'olmei maya. May his great name be blessed forever in all the worlds of the worlds. Barak kochavim barakia, that he created the stars in the heavens, v'natan l'chol echad v'echad makom b'fnei atzmo. And he made a specific place for each one, and the commentaries explain that each star was given a different aspect of the world that they are responsible for. We know that science recognizes that the moon affects the tides. So we have on tradition that different stars were given different strengths. And in the time of the first temple, there were people who knew how to speak to the angels who were responsible for the strengths of the different stars. They were so adept at this that when the prophet would tell them that there's a destruction coming, that the temple would be destroyed, they'd laugh at the prophet and they'd say, bring as many armies as you want. I can take control of the angel of this star, that star, bring down a tremendous fire, bring down all kinds of natural disasters, and I could destroy the armies that attack, and no destruction is coming on the temple. And God says, tell them that it's not going to work. When I want the temple destroyed, their sinful ways will not be protected by these angels. And what God did at the time of the destruction of the first temple was God changed the names of the different angels responsible for the stars. And the people tried to take control of these angels by saying different secret names, and the names didn't work because God made a switch in heavens. Now, what does that mean? I don't know what that means. What does it mean that you speak to the angels and you can make them do what you want? I don't know. I know what it says. But when Tanda Belio is saying that God purposely placed stars in different places in heavens and made the heavens empty space and gave each one its specific place, he's saying that just like the king who had a block of gold, the block of gold, so that's a coarse material. It's a fine material, but it's in a coarse shape. When you take it and refine it and make it into a fine shape, so then you have a fine material with a fine shape that people can look and value. By the same token, God took the stars and made them small with comparison to the space of the heavens and placed them in specific places with specific tasks and specific strengths. And this is to glorify God. Let's remember that this Medrash is going back to the verse where King David said, we quote this every Shabbos, "Hashamayim mesaplim kevod kel." The heavens recount the honor of God. How do the heavens recount the honor of God? So now, Tanda Belio is explaining that when we look at the heavens and we recognize the size of earth in relation to heavens, and we recognize that earth is under one star, so then we're supposed to be struck by the awesome size of the heavens, that there are so many stars in heaven and so much empty space. And when we look at it and we wonder why did God do it so, we recognize that this was done for another aspect of recognizing God's glory, to recognize the strength of each star and the task of each star. So today we've lost that wisdom. We don't understand the stars. But nonetheless, we have the first aspect that Tanda Belio said, and that is to look into the abyss, to look into the heavens at night, see the stars, see the space, think what a huge world God created, and put us here and said, you're important to me. I created all this world, all these constellations. Think about it. Think about how huge the world is. And God reveals himself to the Jewish people and says, I did it all for you. So that's supposed to teach us the glory of Hashem. Hashemayim mesaparim kevod kel. The heavens recount the honor, the glory of God. Any questions?
Yeah. The whole notion of trying to intone the names of these stars in order to them to come down and do these things. This is the better worship.
For sure.
And in general, I have trouble with the idea of the angels because it doesn't. It's hard to understand why Hashem needs to create these spiritual beings that are external to him, yet that are purely spiritual in order to fulfill certain functions when he could do it himself.
Okay. That's a fair question. The answer is going to take the remainder of the class, and I think we'll just take a vote. If people want us to deal with it, so deal with it.